Zion, Vov Elul, Monday the 1st of September, Rabbi Joseph Hillman, the Christmas Twitter, the Olam wishes Rabbi Hillman, the Mazel Tov one, becoming, what's going on there, and a great Zeder.
Thank you very much.
Are you,
We're the topic has been chosen because we are in the run-up to this stage of the year, and I've been asked to point out that Kudi Iskovitz, who is one of the organisers of the Torah Way, is in charge of the Keren HaShavias, which is an organisation which assists farmers in Eretz Yisrael to keep the difficult mitzvah of Shemitah. It's not an easy mitzvah to keep, but the whole year you're not allowed to do work, and there are all sorts of restrictions, and the poor farmers sometimes find that difficult and they need support. So I've been asked just to point out that there will be a Shemitah campaign called Keren HaShavias, and the details will be supplied in the future. My point today is to give you an introduction to what Shemitah is all about, why we have the Shemitah, and what the purpose of Shemitah is. Now, if you look at
the...
The pasuk where this occurs, the parasha where this occurs, is of course Bahar, and there are enormous number of comparisons to Shabbos. In that small parasha, you'll find the Shabbos is mentioned 7 times, and that itself is significant because Shabbos is the 7th day of the week. We know that 7 represents Kedusha Shebateva, and the fact that the word occurs 7 times is a very significant factor. In fact, many places you will find the main point of the particular parasha, whatever the parasha might be, often occurs 7 times. The word which is significant, you do find that as a significance in the Torah and many other parashas too, but the point of this particular parasha is it is a Shabbos. Now, the question is, what exactly is the point of the Shemitah? And before we can decide that, we've got to see what the Torah says about it, and of course where it occurs. Why should it suddenly occur in Parshas Bahar? Ma'in in Shemitah etzel Har Sinai, we say. Now, Rav Shimshon von Hirsch has a very, very important thought on this. He suggests that Torah's Koyanim is to do with Kedusha as we know it, and it starts off with the Korbonos, starts off with the base of the Mishkan, and then the Beis HaMikdash, of course, and we have all the Dinim of Kedusha V'Tara. That takes the first part of Vayikra. And then, by the time we come to Emor, when you finished with talking about the Kohenim and the Baal Numin, we have the Parshas HaMoadim. The question is, what's Moadim, what's Yom Tov particularly got to do with the Beis HaMikdash? Everybody knows that Yom Tov is kept everywhere in the world. Why should Pesach, Shavuos and Sukkot come in Vayikra particularly? And he says, well, it's very simple. Just as you've got Kedusha in space, you have the concept of Kedusha in time. A person's time has to be dealt with as if it is a holy present from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just as when you are in certain places, they are more holy than others. The Beis HaMikdash, of course, is the holiest place. But then you've got every Beis HaKnesses has a Kedusha. It's a Mikdash Ma'at. And there are places, which are rather less holy. But not only is it in space, it's also in time. They have the whole days of the week, but then you've got a Shabbos. The Shabbos is more holy in certain respects. So is Yom Tov. So therefore, it is appropriate to say the Parsha of Yomim Tovim immediately after the Parsha is dealing with Kedusha in space. But then where does Shemitah come into it? he makes the most perceptive observation that Shmita is a combination of Kedusha in space and in time together. It's a concept of the seventh year, that means this particular year has been made Kodesh, but it's also in a particular place in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore the Shmita occurs in Bahar as being a combination and conclusion, so to speak, of Torah's Kohenim, that we should all realize that we have to be makdish both our space and our zman in order to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, going through the parasha, there's another very interesting point. We've said it's called Shabbos a number of times, and we know that it's also called Shabbos Shabbosoim. We find that concept of Shabbosoim in Yom Tov, we find it in Yom Kippur. But here in this parasha, we have something which does not occur elsewhere, except in the parasha of Bereishis, and that is Shabbos Lashem. Somehow or other, Shmita is a different type of Shabbos, not just Stam a Shabbos, or even a Shabbosah, it's that too, but it's also Shabbos Lashem. And that is mentioned in the Sedra, I've pointed out the sheet that you've got, that it only occurs in the case of Shabbos Bereishis and in the Shmita, and that's pointed out by the Sifra, and the Malbim also talks about it.
It's in Emma, surely, and also about Shabbos.
Yeah, but not Lashem. It says Shabbos Shabbosan, it doesn't say Shabbos Lashem.
Shabbos says Shabbos Lashem, and later it says Shabbos Hilochem for Yom Kippur.
But does it say Shabbos Shabbosan Lashem? You better check it out, because I'm quoting a Sifra. So I'm not a Boki in Arab al-Qaeda, but I would be very, very surprised, because this is what the Sifra says. It only occurs in the case of Shmita and in Shabbos Bereishis. I took it at face value. I think you should check carefully to see exactly what the Pasuk says. Right. Now, because it's Shabbos Lashem, that means that there is something special about this particular Shabboson. It's something which is devoted to Hashem. Now, in what way is this specifically an evidence, so to speak, or a Shabbos which is for Hashem? Now, here we come to a very interesting phenomenon. We have the Apikorsim who will say, well, yes, the Torah was given, it was given for human beings, and just as you need to rest on the seventh day of the week, and we know that a Shabbos is a fantastic thing. In fact, there are certain goyim today who want to have an electricity-free day. They want to have a motor-free day in order that they can relax. And we know that the Yidden in Egypt managed to persuade Paro that they needed one day a week for rest in order that the other 6 days they could operate properly. Did you find it?
Yes, Shabbos Hi
Lashem. Shabbos Hi Lashem in Emor. Not Shabbos Lashem, Shabbos Hi Lashem. Well, maybe the He is the... I don't know. That's a good question, and we'll have to look into it afterwards. Thank you very much. So it may be that the fact that is the he it interrupts it, perhaps. And what is it talking about there?
Talking about Shabbos, it's the parashat of Moadim starts with Shabbos, then it goes on to...
Oh, that's Shabbos, it's not Yom Kippur.
No, it's Shabbos.
Oh, that, fine, that's all right. It's saying that you don't find it in Yom Tov or Yom Kippur, you only find it in connection with Shabbos.
Right.
And Shabbos. So when it says Shabbos Bereishis, it may not mean the parasha of Bereishis, it means the Shabbos. Shabbos Bereishis is Shabbos as distinct from Yom Tov. Yeah. Yom Tov is also Shabbos, you see.
Of that section.
Yeah, that's what it means. Shabbos Bereishis. We call the Shabbos Bereishis as Shabbos. I think, so, no kasha. Okay, thank you very much. When it says Shabbos Bereishis, maybe I misinterpreted it. I don't know. Does it occur in Shabbos? I don't think it occurs in Bereishis. It doesn't. So when it says Shabbos Bereishis, it's not Parshas Bereishis. It's the Shabbos Bereishis. Thank you. All right. Misunderstanding here. Right. Okay. So Shabbos Bereishis refers to the seventh day of the week. That's there and also in connection with Shmita, but not in Yom Kippur or Yom Kippur. Thank you very much. Excellent. So problem solved. Right. So now, why, therefore, is it necessary to have a Shabbos Lashem? The answer is it needs to negate the possibility that you might have thought that the Shmita is a natural phenomenon. You know, we need to let the land rest every so often. Everybody knows you leave the land fallow. I come from a rural town, a coal mining town. It was also a rural called Sunderland. out there. And in Sunder there were a certain number of farms. And when we used to go to shul, we used to go to shul over a place called Shalcross, it was called, because apparently Prince Charles once ran away, and it seems that he ran away through Sunderland. And though we went through a farm in order to get to shul every Shabbos. That's how it went. And every year we found a different field had been left fallow. There were about seven different fields, and each one, well, I don't know how many there were, four or five fields, and each year one of them was left fallow and their sheep were in the different field. You never found that one year it would always, the whole lot would be left fallow at once. That just isn't done. So therefore, to say that Shemitah is because of leaving fallow negates the whole principle of crop rotation, which every farmer knows has to be done. So you cannot just simply say it's an agricultural phenomenon. Now, I made a few other points here. If it is meant to be for just for human benefit, why every 7 years? All right, that was said. Why no crop rotation? Why is it a golus for not doing it? If in fact the whole purpose is to make your life better, to make the produce better, and you don't do it, well, the produce won't be better, it'll be worse. Why do we have to have golus? What's golus got? It's such a serious punishment for not keeping the Shemitah that we're told that you get golus for it. You have a look at Pirkei Avos, and we know that from the Petochecha, because you didn't keep the Shemitah, golus. And in any case, if the golus is meant to be that then the land will then rest because there's nobody around, the goyim will come and they will work it even more than we're doing. So what have you achieved by creating a golus? What's the point of it if it's just agricultural? And then, what's Yovel got to do with all this? If Yovel is a second, and nowhere do you ever have trees left fallow for two consecutive years. That's never done. It's always 1 year. But here we have a Yovel every 50th year, and that would indicate that this must be Lamalo Min HaTeva. But there's another very interesting proof, and that's this. When you leave fallow, you leave the fields fallow, the crops should have a rest, the fields should have a rest. One thing you do not leave, and that's trees. Because if you leave the trees, the sap will go out of the trees. Everyone knows if you want to make the tree better, you cut it. You must cut and prune the tree in order that the tree should be improved next year. Because this year you have it hasn't given its fruit out, it keeps its sap within it. And yet we find in the case of Shemitah, there is an issa to prune. Now how can there be an issa to prune if it's only agricultural? And this then leads us to another interesting point, which I like to mention, because I heard this many, many years ago. I was probably a yeshiva bacha, and the late Dr. Spitzer, I don't know if you know the Spitzer family, they were in Gateshead and Sunderland, their father, Zichrono Livracha, was a very thoughtful person, and he once spoke at a yeshiva bracha, and I've never forgotten it since. He was asking, it was Parshas Bahar, and he was asking the following question. He says, look, we know that Shemitah and Yovel are identical. The Rambam tells us there's no difference in the dinim between Shemitah and Yovel. They're both the same. And yet, if you look at the Parsha, certain things are boilate in their differences. Certain things are different. And one of the most important differences is, it tells you in the Shemitah year not to prune. But in the Yovel, it doesn't tell you that. It tells you all the other things. Don't sow, don't plant, don't this, don't that. But it doesn't mention pruning. Now, yes, why not? If, in fact, pruning is one of the cardinal mitzvahs of the Shemitah, not to prune, why on earth is it omitted in the Yovel when the dinim are the same? And here was his answer as follows. Like we said, it's possible that you could think that the Shemitah is natural and agricultural. Therefore, we need a mitzvah which tells us this is not so. What's that mitzvah? Don't prune. Because pruning, you might have thought, would be the thing to do in the Shemitah year. No, he says, don't prune. However, in the Yovel, you don't need to tell us that. Why? Because nobody in their right mind would make 2 years fallow. Therefore, we don't need the message in the Yovel that the oval is not natural. And to point that out, it tells us don't prune in the Shemitah year, but it doesn't tell us that in the Yovel, in order that we should understand that this is just not a set of natural mitzvahs. This is something which the Torah has demanded.
May one prune in the Yovel?
No, you may not. That's what Rambam says, the same halachas apply to Shmita and Yovel. Even though you're in Shmita, it tells you don't sizmer. In Yovel, it doesn't tell you that. You might have thought, well, Yovel's different. No, says the Rambam, the halachas are exactly the same. So the kasha is, if the halachas are exactly the same, why leave it out? Answer, it's left out in order to teach you that you don't need to be told. Because in Yovel, we don't need the message of the fact that it's not natural. Anybody knows that. That's what it's coming there for.
That's the difficulty with that.
Sorry?
The difficulty, we know all difference is good for us. So somehow or other, not proving must also be good for us.
Yeah, of course. But not because it's natural. Because the natural thing would be to prune trees. That's natural. Of course it's good for us. That's any mitzvahs like that. But it's not because it's the physical, natural thing to do. There must be some other aspect. The answer is that you don't do work on Shemitah. And if you don't do work on Shemitah, that's definitely good for us, as we're going to see. The fact that we relax and don't do the work on Shemitah is good for us. It may not be good for the actual tree, but it's good for us. We'll see that. Now, if you then go through the Parsha of Yovel, there are a number of differences between the Loshon, which is used for Shemitah, and the Loshon that's used for now. Remember, I pointed out the halachas are identical. So why should we change the style of the parasha? Well, if you look, you'll see that Shemitah is all in the second person. Noichach, lecho, your land, your, don't do your field. Sodcho. However, when you come to Yovel, it's all third person. It's produce. Why should this be so? And the simple answer is, because during the Shemitah, you still think it's yours. It's through Shemitah, but you still feel that's your property. You've still got that bilus. Although it should be taken away from you and be hefka and free, you can't avoid the natural feeling, this is still my land. And people are trespassing on my land. Well, the Torah says they can trespass, but it's still my land. So it talks about your field and your land. But when it comes to the Yovel, by the time you've got to the second year, nobody can think it's theirs anymore. They've got the message. Once you've got the message, it's not yours, it's its produce. Not your produce, but its produce. And similarly, in the case of Shemitah, you will find that the objects are mentioned, your field, but don't plough. When it comes to Yovel, don't sow. It doesn't say your field at all. Your field's not even mentioned in some cases. It just says, lo sizro, don't sow. Why should it necessarily have to say that in Shemitah, your field, don't plough? It's the same point, because during the Shemitah, you haven't yet got the whole message that you've given it up. The nouns precede the verb in Shemitah. Sod cholos, your field, don't plant. Now, when you mention a word first in Hebrew, that's accented. Normally you accent the verb. That's the rule. The rule is in Hebrew, we don't care who you are, we just care what you do. Yes, a king might be more important than a cleaner, but that doesn't make the king any different from the cleaner. They've both got to do what they've got to do, and each one will get their sechar for what they do. Therefore, Hebrew, vayomer. Hebrew will come, the verb always comes first. If the verb doesn't come first in Hebrew, it's got to be for a tachlis, usually emphasis, or some other point. For example, in English, we don't put the verb, we put the subject first. But in English, if you put the object before the subject, for example, ice cream you mustn't eat. You don't know, if you say you mustn't eat ice cream, okay, fine. If you say ice cream you mustn't eat, that is ice cream you madgish whatever you mention first. So the object, if you mention the object first, then it emphasizes that. And it's the same in Lashon HaKodesh, except in Lashon HaKodesh it's the verb, then the subject, and then the object. So why in Shemitah is the object all put first? Son cholos Israel, your field you mustn't sow. Why say that? Selosis Rasokho. Answer, because it's emphasizing the concept of bilus that you think it's yours? No, it's not. But that's only necessary in Shemitah. When it comes to Yovel, we don't need to have that message. If you look at the psukim carefully, you'll see that the nouns in the Shemitah precede the verb. In Yovel, the verb comes first, as it should do, and sometimes the object is omitted altogether. Now, and in Shemitah, it says Shabbos Lashem. It doesn't say Shabbos Lashem in Yovel, believe it or not. Why not? Answer, because Yovel, we don't need to mention it. Yovel, everybody knows it's Shabbos Lashem. It's only in the Shemitah that you've got to bang away at this concept that this is not a natural phenomenon. This is something which HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to do. Now we come to the last stage. What is the purpose of Shabbos Lashem? What is it about? Well, we've already described this Lashem. It's not just a natural phenomenon. So Shabbos Lashem means this is something which Hashem has commanded. It's not necessarily, it's certainly going to be for your good, as you said, but we don't necessarily know why or how. It's something we do, like any mitzvah. The Torah tells us to do it. The first answer for any mitzvah is because the Torah says so. Just like a child looks at his father and his father says, do this, you do it because you know your father knows best. I've often told you the story when I was in the back of the car with my brother, and my father was driving from Sunderland, that's where we lived, to London. And it wasn't like now they had motorways. You had to go all the damn back streets, and there were very few dual carriageways, and you had to go through different towns, through Durham County, and you used to see the policemen directing the traffic in County Durham, and then you used to go through other places. And we said, how are we going to get there? We don't know where we are. We don't know where we're going. We're lost. We've never seen this place before. How are we going to get there? So now I remember turning around to my brother and I said to him, don't worry, Daddy knows. He's driving the car. He'll get us there. Just be calm. My daddy will get us there. He knows exactly where to go. He knows what to do. He knows how to handle things. Leave it to him. It's exactly the same thing. Hashem knows. We just need to leave it to Hashem and do what He tells us. As long as we do what He tells us, Shabbos Lashem. We don't know why, we don't know how it's going to work. As you said before, pruning seems to be, absence of pruning seems to be damaging. Don't worry, the Pasuk says you'll get a brocha in the following year. How? Don't ask, it'll come. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what's best. And that's the same with any mitzvah. Then the shaila is, are you allowed to deal with the tameh mitzvah? That depends. If it's a choik, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, stop and don't try and think about it. Even a chok, the Mefarshim do give explanations for chokim. But if it's a mishpat, not a chok, then you are allowed. And on the contrary, you're supposed to try to understand. Once you accept that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has told us what to do it, you are allowed to try to find reasons for it and to try. It's like tameh mitzvah. Why is it called tameh mitzvah? It's the taste. The doctor tells you take a pill. It's far better to take a sweet pill than a sour one. You know, if you can get a pill which has got a sweet taste, it's telling the people, Taka, the children will have much more fun in having that particular type of pill than having it, something which is sour cod liver oil or whatever it is. If you've got a nice taste to the pill, it makes it better. And that's the same with mitzvahs. That's why they're called tame. Tame means the reason, but it also means the taste. It means if you can do the mitzvah and it's got a point to it, like the tzitzis, we said, represent the arba kanfus or oretz. They represent to protect you, etc. The tefillin, the yorim mimecha, the goyim should see the tefillin and realize how that has an effect. So each mitzvah has its purpose and its point, and the Shemitah is no different. It's true that the Shemitah has to be because Hashem said to Hashem, but there's got to be, we are entitled to try to find out reasons for it. And the reason given in the first instance is it's Lashem, that is teaching us emunah Lashem. Just have faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Can you imagine a whole year not plowing, not doing the land, just relying on Hashem that this should be as it should because Hashem said so.
The whole country.
The whole country, absolutely, not just one spot. That's quite right. No, there's no crop rotation here, and area rotation. It's the whole of Eretz Yisrael at one and the same time. If you want to follow that through, I've made a list here of the sources for this. That's obvious, really. But the Netziv and the Alkut Me'amlois say Emuno. Next, the Mizrahi, in explanation of Rashi, wants to say that the, one of the purposes of Shemitah is evidence of Brias HaOlam. You know that the big argument of evolution and creation, etc., goes on all the time in the universities and in the, with the Goyim. We sometimes need reminding that there was a Brias HaOlam, and the significance of the Shemitah year, which is mentioned, which the Mizrahi explains that that's how Rashi learns it, the Shabbos Lashem, the connection between Shabbos, which is also evidence of Brias HaOlam, Shabbos Bereishis, that we called it before, and if you look at the Ibn Ezra, the Ramban, one of the Purushim in the Chinuch, and the Pirkei Avos, the Akedah, the Barbanel, they say that the Golus comes because of denial of the Brias HaOlam. That's, if you don't agree that Kodesh Baruch Hu created it and gave it to you, then you don't deserve to be there. And that's why Golus is the punishment for this. Otherwise you might say, why Golus particularly? Well, the answer is because the Torah says so. But the, what they all say is, if you don't believe in the Brias HaOlam, that means you don't believe that this belongs to Hashem, then you've got no right to be there, get out, so to speak. That's the second Shitta. The third Shitta is very simple. The Al-Sheikh says that this is our title document to Eretz Yisrael. Why are we entitled to Eretz Yisrael? Do you know why? Because we can show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to have it. How can we show that? How are you going to prove it? Well, the answer is, if you can leave your whole land for 1 year totally in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you don't do anything towards it, and it stays and you get bracha from it, that's a proof that this is meant to be our land. No other nation could do that. It isn't possible. The fact that we do that, and we have a whole, the whole of the land is tachas shlitas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, completely in his power, shows that this belongs to us. And the fact that we've taken it away from the seven nations, or that the Arabs feel it's as much theirs as his, it's no. This proves to the Goyim, this proves to the world, that Eretz Yisrael belongs to the Jews and to the Yidden, and therefore it is a title document that we have it every 7 years. That's the Al-Sheikh. Next one, the obvious one as well, the Chinuch and the Kli Yakor, they say, it gives us the Midas HaBitochen. Now, Bitochen and Emunah are not quite the same thing. Emunah is, you believe in Hashem, faith. Hashem's in charge, we've discussed that. Bitochen means you rely upon your Hashem that he will do what's right and give you what your parnas is. Now, where do you find a better example of having Bitochen in Hashem that you will do nothing and your food will come on the table? You have to be a very high madrega to be able to do that. Not to work, not to do things, and expect that Hashem will give you. You're not allowed to do that normally. Normally, if you've got to work, earn your living, and put the food will not come on the table unless you do your hishtadlus. Yet, we are told, don't do any hishtadlus this year. This year, just have bitochen in Hashem. This teaches us that you should know that whatever happens is ordained from milamalo, and therefore the Midas HaBitochen is what Shemitah is coming to teach us. And once every 7 years we need that mitzvah. The next one is the Midas HaVatrodus. The Chinuch says sometimes you've got to know that you've got to be mevater. You can't always demand, that's mine, I've got to have it. You've got to learn to give and to learn to be golifni mishur sadin. You've got to learn sometimes that you've got to let other people off, even though they may have offended you and hurt you. I'm not saying that you've got to be stupid about it. Of course, you've got to, the other person's got to be taught how to behave. But it doesn't mean to say you've got to well up a hatred and demand the last thing. This Shemitah teaches us that sometimes you've got to be mevater. You've got to leave things to others. Now, here, the whole of your land, other people are eating in it and coming in it. You feel, you know, what they're doing in my land? Well, you know, why they're here? Answer, you've got to understand that once in 7 years, you're mevata on your rights. That's the third pshat in the Chinuch. The Meshech Chochma has a very, very interesting pshat as well, as he always does. And he asks, why is it that the mitzvah of Hakel has to come immediately after a Shemitah year. The Hakil is always the Pesach after the Shemitah year. Why is it that, the Sukkot, thank you, just testing, the Sukkot immediately after the Shemitah year, you have a Hakil. So one of the Mephoshim also points out that you have the expression Hakel at the time of Har Sinai. Klal Yisrael were told to be Hakel in Har Sinai. If there's a Barakura, maybe you can give me the exact posuk. Hakel, that's Om. I think it's Hakel, it's Om. So, sorry? Oh, that's Hakel, is it? Yeah, but there's also Hakel in it. The same word is used at Matan Torah when the Klal Yisrael had to get together. So he suggests Gzeira Shava type of thing, that just as Hakel, when the people come together to Yerushalayim to learn Torah and to be get the Melech tells them all the dinim of the Torah, this was as a Gzeira Shava to Har Sinai, which should be similar. So it says the Meshech Chochmah, we can see from here that the fact that Hakel comes immediately after the Shemitah year, that during the Shemitah year you should have been preparing for the Hakel. It's always like that. What is Hakel? Hakel is a time when we can discuss the Torah at a deep level. So therefore the time of the Shemitah year is a time that we should be learning Torah, and it's given like in the Midbar. In the Midbar it was Dor HaMidbar, they got their mon from heaven, the Dor Ochle HaMon, and they all just sat there and they learned Torah. The purpose of the Shemitah is that the people can sit in the yeshivas, they can sit and learn Torah without, for 1 year without problems. And this is, we do find that you have to sometimes go back to recharge your batteries, and you've got, I started 3 or 4 minutes late, I'm sorry. Okay, and therefore, that is the point. So, all those reasons, therefore, are in the Shemitah, and in Yitzhak Hashem, we should be able to be mechazik the inyan of Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael. At the moment, I think it's only Drabonim, but when Mashiach will come, we'll go back to the Diraisa again.